This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast, brought to you by Jayhawk Slant. We go behind the scenes to bring you the inside scoop from Les Miles and his staff, the KU players, and recruits. Here are your hosts of the Football Podcast, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers. Welcome back to another edition of the Inside Slant Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We're back with another all-football episode, and we have got a lot of great information for you today. We're going to talk about new offensive coordinator Brent Dierman. We have lots of information coming out of the bye week, the matchup with Texas coming up Saturday night. We're going to preview that, and John Kirby's got some developments on the recruiting trail that you're definitely going to want to hear about. We'll be joined by Jeff Ketchum, who gives us a great in-depth breakdown of the Texas Longhorns. And we're going to talk with Staley High School defensive end Caleb Taylor. First, let me welcome in my partner and the publisher of Jayhawk Slant, the most in-depth, in-the-know man on the Kansas football beat, Mr. John Kirby. Kirby, how are you today?
Man, you keep introducing me like that. Your check's in the mail.
Man, you know, you've been doing this longer than anybody. You know about this program more than anybody. People need to know that. You know, the podcast thing, even though we've been doing it for a few years now, every week we talk about it. We have new downloads, people that have never heard it before.
Well, here's
got to make sure that we know.
Well, hey,
and that they know we know what we're talking about.
So here's the inside scoop for the podcast for everybody listening. They got to know that you now have some a leg to stand on in contract negotiations, because last night we were going to record. Withers couldn't go. He's sick as can be. He finally calls and says, I can't do this. So you're out. So now you're listed as doubtful for the podcast. Then you rally. Now you've been upgraded to questionable, and you finally said, all right, let's fire the mics up and get this podcast done. So, hey, there's a little inside scoop. Withers fighting through injury to make it for game day.
You know, I've got to give credit where credit is due. The people at CVS took good care of me this morning. So after a late run to the pharmacy, I was upgraded just before game time. And like Kirby said, here we go. So if I sound a little off this morning, please forgive me. But I am fighting through, and Lord knows I've always been a gamer. Kirby, let's get this thing started. Let's talk about maybe the biggest story of the last week and a half. Brent Dierman, new Jayhawks offensive coordinator. You and I have been around the players and the program here over the last several days, and there seems to be some real excitement here. It's palpable.
Yeah, there has. You know, I know you were with the players Tuesday. I was with players on Monday. I was around Les Miles. I've talked to some other people in the program. And, you know, it seems like there's a renewed energy. And I don't know if it's exactly what Brent Dierman has done in the bye week, bringing that fresh new start to the offense. I've talked to the players. They've talked about the energy. There's better pace. They're up tempo. Carter Stanley said he thinks that, you know, Brent Dierman can relate with the players. He's a young guy. You know, he definitely knows that RPO offense. And I think there's just kind of a new energy in there. And, you know, Brent Dierman knows what he wants to do now. I mean, just on our message board, you've seen some posts. I know, hey, some credit to Jay Stu on the board. He got Dierman's book, and he's been posting some excerpts from that. So, you know, Brent Dierman knows what he wants to do. Now, obviously, he's got to, you know, show the guys what he wants to do, and they've got to absorb it. But I wrote something this morning and posted it. Bryce Tornaden, who plays on defense, said he's even noticed the tempo and the energy that the offense is bringing. And he says that can even help on the defensive side, Because if those players see how the offense is reacting and that they have confidence in the game plan that Dearman and it's kind of permeating on the offensive side, he said that can even carry over to the other side of the ball. So I thought that was kind of an interesting angle on that as well. So, you know, you were around just Puka and some of the receivers the other night, and, you know, those guys seem pretty upbeat.
They do. They were really excited. Andrew Parchment was, you couldn't wipe the smile off his face as soon as you asked about, Brent Dearman being promoted essentially from an analyst to becoming the offensive coordinator. And, you know, I thought he said it really well. He goes, he was like, it's the same recipe, but there's a new cook in the kitchen. And somebody asked him, is there going to be a different flavor to the offense now, which I thought was funny. But I think there's been a lot of discussion about that. You know, what are we going to see? What's the difference we're going to see? And I think it was very telling, not so much what the kids were saying, you know, him and Puka and Stephon Robinson that I talked with on Tuesday evening, but if you, and that's the great thing about video, is I think you can kind of see it in their faces. They were holding back, and Stephon, even at one point, it was really funny that night. He stopped. He goes, "Oh, I almost said something I'm not supposed to say," and that told me, in addition to the fact that at one point I looked down and his scouting report was between his feet while he was talking, and he saw me. He noticed that I saw it, and he reached down to make sure that there was nothing showing. And I think we are going to see some differences. I've seen just the players, the way they're talking. You know, I was actually standing in the facility watching guys come out of the practice facility and in heading for the locker rooms, and there's a different energy. I haven't seen the guys this spirited and kind of going at each other. It reminded me of what you and I saw in fall camp, what we saw in spring ball. I think there are going to be some differences, and the guys aren't going to say it, obviously, because they're very well coached. You know, Katie Lonergan and the staff, they do a good job making sure guys don't say anything. They don't give anything away that they're not supposed to. I think we're going to see some differences in this offense, and I, for one, I'm excited to see what Brent Dearman rolls out against Texas. Kirby, we all know that Dearman is a smart football coach and that he comes with a lot of support from people in the profession. I mean, I think I've mentioned before, I've heard from high school coaches in Kansas and Missouri that have talked about how approachable he is and how much information he's willing to share and just how much insight he has into the RPO and how basic he can make it and how easy he can teach it. With that in mind, how he does an amazing job of making something that looks very complex, very simple for the guys that need to be able to execute it, those being the athletes in his system. With that in mind, how can we expect an impact on this offense, and how quickly can we start to see him putting his handprints on the system that we're going to see with the Jayhawks?
Well, I think the important thing is here, Randy, to know is that, you know, Brent Dearman isn't a miracle worker. Okay. He's not going to be able to take some magic dust and just sprinkle it on the offensive side of the ball and
exactly
just turn up and be great. I mean, listen, hey, if he does, that's phenomenal. Brent Dearman will probably be making $1 million a year soon somewhere. So he's a very good football coach. I've talked to several people. I've talked to people in the coaching profession. I've talked to people that have seen him in clinics. They are all high on his knowledge and what he can do. But remember, the players are still learning the verbiage here. They're still learning what he's putting in. Carter Stanley, some of the receivers said that the other night. So I think the big thing here is just being patient. You know, let him get his system in. But remember, Kansas, the problem they've had, Randy, is they don't have an identity on offense. I've said this all year. We don't know who Kansas is. They've done a little bit of everything, but really not excelled at one thing. So, you know, yeah. I think that's what Dearman can change. You know, they'll come out in I formation. They'll have double tights. They'll be doing toss sweeps and trying to run between tackles. And then the next thing, you know, they're in four wide and they're trying to do a hurry up. And they've had success doing that. So there are some guts of the offense that are there right now that Brent Dearman can take and he can enhance. So it's not like he's got to go do a wholesale change. Some of what he wants to do has already been kind of installed somewhere in the offense. He's just got to go in and bring it out.
Let's head over to the studio now. We're going to bring in Jeff Ketchum. from OrangeBloods.com, who breaks down the Longhorns and is going to give us his take on Saturday night's game with the Jayhawks.
We are joined by Jeff Ketchum, who is the publisher of OrangeBloods.com, the number one site for Texas information. Jeff, what's going on?
Oh, just putting all of the pieces to Humpty Dumpty back together again after a tough loss over the weekend for the Longhorns, losing to Oklahoma. It's kind of a surreal time for Texas fans, in that I think going into Saturday against Oklahoma, they were as confident about playing Oklahoma as they've probably been in a decade, only to play at a level in that game that doesn't really reflect the final score, and it's left Longhorn fans questioning exactly what this team is and where the program is with six games to go on the schedule.
Jeff, I watched Tom Herman's press conference. There was a lot of talk about the injuries and being banged up on the defensive side of the ball. Just talk about the latest injuries and how's that affected the defense.
Well, you know, it was a defense that lost eight starters from a year ago. And while none of the starters were guys that ended up being first or second round picks, I think Charles Omenihu, the defensive end that's playing for the Texans right now, would have been the guy that would have been the hardest to replace from a talent standpoint. It was a lot of turnover, and the guys that have come into those positions haven't exactly tore it up. So you've got a defense that's been trying to find itself and trying to reinvent itself after a year ago, and then you add all of the injuries into all of into a defense that was already going through mass turnover, and they just haven't been able to find a consistent scheme or lineup that they can put on the field. I think I saw something on Twitter earlier this week that they've literally started and played a different base defense, whether, you know, they've got three linebackers on the field one week or seven DBs on the field the next week or six, and it's like a mismatch from week to week. Sometimes it's a subtle change, but they haven't had really much of the same base defense that they can lean on and say, that's what we do when times get tough. These group of guys, this is what we do. And then on top of that, the injuries, especially in the secondary, have just been nonstop. I mean, they go into the game against Kansas. They're playing without Jalen Green, who's their best cornerback. He's been out the last few weeks. They've had to kind of figure out who their corners are on the fly, because Jalen Green was their number one guy, and then the other guys were competing in the second spot, and they couldn't find any consistency in the second spot. And then Green gets hurt, and suddenly the guys that weren't being consistent and couldn't hold down the job at the other cornerback spot are suddenly in both cornerback spots. Weirdly, cornerback wasn't really their problem on Saturday against Oklahoma. It should, but I don't know that I would be confused with saying that's not necessarily something to keep an eye on Saturday. Cornerback's been a big problem all season long. They might have played as well as possible against Oklahoma compared to the rest of the season, just because we weren't seeing a lot of coverage burns. Like, Oklahoma had players that were getting wide open, but it wasn't necessarily because the cornerbacks weren't doing a good job in coverage. I thought Lincoln Riley did a great job in terms of scheming and created matchups that didn't even involve the biggest question marks on the Texas team. The safety spot has been a revolving door of players. Caden Stearns is a guy that went into this season, some people thinking, including myself, that he might be ready to be an All-American type player. Well, he's hurt, he's out of the game, and he wasn't really playing that well beforehand. So it's just, look, the defense ranks right now statistically as one of the worst in the history of the Texas program. They've got talent. It is completely dysfunctional in a way right now. I mean, the team went into Saturday's game against the Sooners with the most missed tackles of any school in the country. I think they went officially into the game on Saturday with 47. We counted 28 missed tackles.
Wow.
In the Oklahoma game, which is the second most missed tackles that we've ever counted in a game over the course of the last decade or so. So defensively, Texas is a tough team to figure out. They have a lot of speed. There are times when they look incredibly capable, and then there are times when they're way too easy to score points against. And I don't know how to tell you, as someone covering the team that's coming to town this weekend, like what to expect, other than it's a defense where plays can be made again. So if Texas plays the way it has all season and Kansas can simply deliver a little bit of consistency within its own self and, you know, not trip over their own feet, I think there are plays to be made and points to be scored.
So shifting gears, moving over to the offensive side of the ball, what have you seen from Texas on that side, and what can Kansas fans expect from the offense?
Well, I think offensively Texas can be elite in the passing game, and we saw it against LSU. We really have seen it all season long except for the last couple of games, both against West Virginia and against Oklahoma coming off of the bye week. Sam Ehlinger, again, with the exception of the last 2 weeks, has really been an elite player. The wide receivers are probably as good as any in the Big 12 outside of Oklahoma. I mean, you know, Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, Jake Smith, Brennan Eagles. The list kind of goes on and on and on of guys that on Saturday I think a Kansas fan could look up and go, holy crap, like we weren't even talking about that guy going into the game, and he just – you know, went 60 on us. Like, Texas has the kind of abilities to do that. They're inconsistent running the football, largely because they've gone back and forth trying to figure out who their best running back is. I mean, Keyonte Ingram was expected to carry a lot of the load. He hasn't been consistently good. He had 2 carries for 9 yards on Saturday against Oklahoma, which, given their running back injuries that they have, meant that Rashawn Johnson, a converted quarterback from a couple of months ago, seems to be their best option. He was their best player against Oklahoma on the offensive side of the ball. And I think the big thing to watch on Saturday is that, you know, I think the Texas players have a lot of respect for Kansas up front on the defensive side of the ball. When you look at the Texas offensive line, the left side of that line, so Sam Cosmi and Parker Braun, those two guys are really good. And even Oklahoma media and fans, and I think coaches would come away telling you that, you know, those guys were good. Where Texas really struggled was from the center over to the right tackle. They've got a guy in Zach Shackelford who was a first-team All-Big 12 player coming into the season. I've never thought that he's that good. He's a little undersized. He struggled mightily against the Sooners. They were running stunts and twists and, you know, the things that good defensive lines do, and Texas really didn't adjust to them very well. That's the second time in as many games that three-man portion of that Texas offensive line has struggled. I thought Stills from West Virginia really gave that offensive line some problems the week before, and I thought coming into the game, if Oklahoma paid any attention at all to what happened in that game, they're going to attack from that side of the Texas offensive line, and it's exactly what happened. Texas gives up 9 sacks on Saturday, and if I'm Kansas, everything that I'm doing with my best players, I'm doing it on that side of the line, because you might be wasting your time trying to go up against Sam Cosmi and Parker Braun, whereas that other side, there's a lot of money to be made if you just, I think, execute a lot of the same things that West Virginia and Oklahoma have done in consecutive weeks.
Jeff, watching the press conference from Tom Herman, something else that caught my attention. He said this was the first game, and I think he phrased it since he's been at Texas, that he felt they've been out-physicaled by an opponent. So how do you see them coming out this week after a statement like that from him?
It's a good question. You know, I think that this school generally, the Oklahoma, and I thought Tom Herman made a really astute point during the press conference on Monday when he pointed out it's a little bit of a different thing to have your the rivalry game in the middle of the season because, you know, win or lose, sometimes it can be difficult to pick up the pieces going into the next weekend, and I think that that's a challenge for this Texas team because they didn't just get beat. I think Texas fans, you know, they saw it a year ago. They beat Oklahoma, and then Oklahoma comes back and beats them in the Big 12 championship game. So I think Texas fans were prepared for this could go sideways. Texas could lose, And there's no real reason to overreact, because that's what happens when two good football teams play. And ultimately, the game in December matters most, getting there and then performing in that moment. What Texas fans weren't prepared for was to be completely played off the field in a way that, again, isn't really befitting of a final score that suggested that that was a seven-point game. You know, Oklahoma, I didn't think, played an A-level game. And I think that if Oklahoma had shown that, that's what it looked like when Oklahoma plays their B game and Texas plays their D game. If they'd gotten a hold of Texas on a day where they played their A game, I think that that could have been a 4-touchdown victory for Oklahoma. And that's the part that Texas has got to regroup from. Is Kansas enough? Like, Texas has to play to a standard, and it hasn't done that really in the month of October. It seemed like in September that was what they were playing for, and that's where in the majority of their games, I thought, certainly on the offensive side of the ball, you would see that. I don't know what Texas team shows up on Saturday. My expectations are that Texas at home, with the offense that it has, I think they're going to score a lot of points on Saturday. I think they'll give up some points, but you know, the real question is, can they play an emphatically positive brand of football and kind of get back on their horse for the rest of the season? They're in good shape. They got six games to go. There's nobody on their schedule that they won't be favored to beat. I don't know, maybe with the exception of Baylor, they should have lost this weekend against Texas Tech, but they are undefeated and ranked, and I don't know how Vegas would view a matchup against Texas in that situation. But by and large, Texas has got a bunch of games now in front of them that they need to win and should win. I don't know if this team is mature enough and consistent enough to do that, because beyond playing this weekend against Kansas, they still have road games in Ames. They still have a road game in Fort Worth. They still have a road game in Waco. They still get Texas Tech in Austin. So, you know, it's a weird, tricky little schedule. None of the names that I just mentioned, I think, are teams that anybody should be afraid of. But they're all capable on their day, I think, of posing problems. And I think Kansas will do the same this weekend. I think that Les Miles will bring in a team that, if nothing else, is going to play a physical brand of football. At least they're going to try to. And Texas has to match that. They didn't a week ago. You know, I think the challenge for Texas this weekend is to prove that the team that played in the Cotton Bowl on Saturday isn't the true version of themselves, that was a bit of a one-off. But I think the truth may be somewhere in the middle, which could make for an interesting game on Saturday.
Well, I'll put you on the spot. My final question for you, I mean, just how do you see the matchup between Kansas and Texas, and do you have a prediction?
I think Texas will win. I think Texas will score a lot of points. I mean, you tell me. I think Texas is going to score 40. What's Kansas going to score? Because this game, you know, Texas, I think, against Oklahoma, didn't want to get into a racetrack kind of a game. I think they view themselves against Kansas as the team that will want to – look, they're going to probably be a lot more wide open than they were on Saturday, and Texas fans are going to say, why weren't you that wide open and explosive against Kansas or against Oklahoma? Why do you wait a week to do that? But at a minimum, I expect Texas to be in the 30s. My concern for Kansas is that even against a Texas team – that statistically is fielding one of the worst defenses in school history and makes a ton of tackles, do they have enough playmaking to hang with Texas? Because this could be a game where ultimately it ends up being somewhere along the lines of 44-27, something like that, and we'll look back on it and say, Kansas gave a really good account for themselves, nothing to be ashamed of, they scored some points, but I think the true strength of this Texas team is its ability, I think, to score in its passing game. I don't know if Kansas can give Texas enough problems that it can, at home, that it can keep Texas from kind of doing the things in the passing game that it wants to do. LSU wasn't able to do that. Nobody that Texas has really played this season has really truly been able to slow down the Texas passing game except Oklahoma last week. My gut instinct says Texas gets back to making those types of plays that had made Sam Ellinger the number six player in the Heisman odds in terms of how Vegas was ranking candidates prior to last weekend. If they don't, this game could be surprisingly closer than I think a lot of, you know, college football experts would predict. If this game were in Lawrence, I would circle it as a very tricky game for Texas. We've seen it be tricky in the past in the last few years. I just don't know that Kansas has enough explosiveness on offense to do to Texas what LSU, you know, Texas got into a racetrack kind of a game with LSU and it lost. But it wasn't because the offense wasn't great and it didn't, you know, they scored at will against an LSU team that has NFL players all over its defense. I think that's the type of game we could see break out. The pressure really will be on the Texas defense to allow its offense to create some separation. I think the defense will bounce back. I just don't know how much it means.
That is Jeff Ketchum, and he does the best job of breaking down the Longhorns of anybody that I've ever talked to. Hey, Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Anytime, my man. Always love talking to you, John. Be well.
That was a good breakdown, as you will get, on the Texas Longhorns, and it sounds like UT has some questions of their own. That was as good of a breakdown as you will get on Texas, and it sounds like the Longhorns have some questions of their own. John, we heard Ketchum with the UT side of things. How do you see this matchup? And do you think Texas could be in for a letdown, or could they be looking past Kansas?
Well, that's been brought up. You know, Texas is going to go on the road, I believe, after Kansas to play TCU. So this is Kansas is kind of this weird sandwich game in the middle there, because you've got Oklahoma, and then you've got on the road at TCU, which, you know, those are two games that Texas is going to circle every year, knowing that those two guys are key opponents from them. Now, so the thing that I'll say that I don't think that you're going to see a letdown, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I watched Tom Herman's press conference, and that thing went about 25 minutes. And I thought there was a couple parts that were interesting, and I kind of touched on it with Ketchum there in our interview. There, about the 17-minute mark of Herman's press conference, he looked out to the reporters out there, and he looked at everybody, and he goes, "Do you guys all understand we have a football game coming this Saturday night?" Like, kind of like he was not asked one question about Kansas in 25 minutes. I mean, it was bizarre. And at the very end of his press conference, Tom Herman goes, "Hey, that's it. Thank you for coming. Hey, let's go beat Kansas." Like, it was like a reminder to everybody that, guys, we have a football game this Saturday night, and we're not looking past it. We're done with Oklahoma. And there was one thing that stood out to me, and Jeff and I touched on this. Tom Herman said he was asked about one thing that disappointed him in the game against Oklahoma. And he says it's the first game since he's been coaching at Texas that they got pushed around, kicked around. And his quote was, "They were out physical." So they went back to hitting in practice this week. They practiced on Sunday, the day after the Oklahoma game. So I think Kansas is going to get Texas good shot. I really believe that. There are some similarities, and this reminds me a little bit of when Kansas played TCU a few weeks ago. TCU was coming off that loss to SMU. They were fired up. They just got embarrassed by losing to their crosstown rival in SMU. Gary Patterson was mad at their performance. He was mad at the way that he felt their fans left and the SMU fans moved down. And he had TCU ready to play. And my guess is, after hearing Tom Herman talk about getting out physical and pushed around, they are going to have an emphasis on Texas to get ready to go. Probably my biggest concern in the game, Randy, is the Kansas defense against the Texas offense. Texas is pretty good on offense. They really are. I mean, they're the second best scoring team in the Big 12. They're averaging 450 yards a game. They put up 530 yards against LSU. They put up 500 yards against Oklahoma. The one anomaly was last week. They just did not play and move the ball very well and consistent as they have against Oklahoma. So, you know, they're going to score points. They have the ability to score points. Now, on the flip side, Texas's defense has given up 450 yards a game. Now, when you look at that, they've played Oklahoma State, they've played Oklahoma, they've played LSU. They've played some pretty good football teams, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So when you look at this matchup, I really think it comes down to, can Kansas get off the field? Can they get some stops? can they stiffen up in the red zone? Because Texas is going to get there. Can they force field goals? I mean, all of a sudden, you know, Texas can put two really good drives together, and if you hold them to three, that's a whole different deal than giving up touchdowns. So, you know, Kansas, I believe, last I looked, had, I think, the number one red zone defense in the Big 12. So, there's going to be some games within the game this week. You know, Brent Dearman, what is his effect going to be on the game? What does the offense look like? At the same side, you know, nobody's asked, you know, the Texas defensive coordinator this at all. Hey, how do you prepare for an offense that you're going to see in Kansas that you don't know what's coming? There's nothing that tells you what's coming. I'm sure those guys have gone back and tried to pull out film of Bethel College to find out what Brent Dearman did and what some of his tendencies were back then. So I think there's a lot of storylines in this game, and I'm excited to watch it just to see what both teams do.
We're halfway through the season, John. Is this where you thought the Jayhawks would be in the first year under Les Miles? And what have you seen since he took over the program that you like so far?
Well, in terms of wins, it's probably close to what I thought. Hey, listen, when this season started, Las Vegas had Kansas, I believe, pegged right at three wins. Okay, I mean, they're sitting at two right now. You know, you sure hate to see that loss to Coastal Carolina. So from a win standpoint, I would say they're pretty close to being on schedule where I expected and a lot of people expected. I think three may be the good number. You know, they're at two. So it's not too far off. But again, I look at other things right now. Les Miles is trying to turn this program around. Okay, we all knew that wasn't going to happen in 1 year. I know there was a lot of, you know, pub in the off season, a lot of, you know, lot of talk, a lot of positivity, and that's great. But I think the hardcore KU football fan knows deep down that it takes time. If those people that have been around in the Mason and Mangino era, they know that these things aren't done overnight. I referred to Brent Dearman just can't sprinkle some magic dust on the offense and make it good. Well, Les Miles can't do that with the program. This is going to take hard work. It's going to take late hours in the office, and it's going to take development of players. It's going to take recruiting, and it's just going to take a toughness that Les Miles is trying to instill in the program. But the things that I like, I've seen, you know, I've seen the kids, they play hard. They play with a lot of effort. They're lined up in the right spot. There's a lot of things that are in play here that, you know, show me that there's some progress and there's some positive signs going forward. You know, I talked about finding that identity on offense. I think Brent Dearman can come and do that. So I think they're being coached right. I think they play hard. They play to the last snap, and they've given really good effort in all the games. I thought in the Coastal Carolina loss, I thought they still played hard. They just didn't play that well, but they played hard all the way through the game.
John, you always get to go first, so I'm going to turn the tables and give my prediction for the game. You know, we've talked about Texas. We've talked about that defense and how tough they have been, and that they are still one of the best offenses in the conference. I think I'm optimistic that we will see some things offensively from Brent Dearman and the Jayhawks, but I think it's too early in the process to see a major turnaround in regards to production and scoring. I think we'll see some subtle wrinkles start to be revealed this week, but I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference in the scoreboard and what we see up there. I see this one, I'm going to call it 41-14 Texas. I think UT comes out and works to really establish their ground game. I think they also try to get the kicking game involved to try to solidify some things for later on in the season. I'm like you. I think Tom Herman is going to make a statement that there is no hangover, and he and his players are going to prove that the loss to Oklahoma in the Red River War is not going to affect them the rest of the year.
Boy, you've got the Longhorns covering the spread and everything. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go a little bit with the KU homer side here, and I think the Jayhawks are going to play a good football game. I don't think they're going to win. I just still think it's a tall order. I think Texas will be ready to play. I think Kansas can move the football, and if the Kansas defense can do some of the things that they did against Oklahoma, and if the Kansas offense can sustain some drives. Now remember, hey, with 6 or 7 minutes to go till halftime, Kansas and Oklahoma are tied up 7-7. I mean, there's nobody in the world that would have ever predicted that, that game sitting there knotted at 7 with, you know, 6 or 7 minutes to go until half. So I think Kansas has to play a smart football game. I'm going to go with Texas 34, Kansas 24 in what I think could be a good competitive game, which Kansas has played a lot of those this year.
Kirby, I like it. I'm with you. I think they're going to – Kansas will play tough, and I think they're going to be representative. I think Texas just has so much. But I see the spread obviously being a little bigger than what you've said. Let's turn this over to the recruiting side. And I know just before we started recording, you mentioned that you've got some new information. So I'm just going to let you take the mic and tell us the latest developments that you've heard on the recruiting trail for the Jayhawks.
Yeah, Randy, starting late Wednesday night through this morning, I've kind of stumbled. I don't know if I've stumbled on it or just kind of come across some things and had some contact with recruits, and they're starting to be
a little bird told you.
A little bird told me, and then I followed up and confirmed. So those little birds are nice these times of year, but I'll tell you what, there's some things starting to cook on the recruiting side, and these are all developments that have just come about in probably the last 12 to 15 hours from late Wednesday night through Thursday morning. Tristan Golightly, who is a wide receiver, Rivals has him listed as a tight end. I don't know what the other services have. I think they have him as a tight end as well. He is not a tight end. Tristan Golightly, in my opinion, is a wide receiver. He's out of Mesquite, Poteet. And Emmett Jones has been recruiting him for a while, building a good relationship with him. You know, he's got offers from LSU, Houston, Nebraska, Utah, Central Florida. I think either Iowa or Iowa State's offered him. So this kid is a talented football player. He told me he plans to take a visit to Kansas. Also, another one that says he doesn't have a date set, but he is planning to take a visit out of Florida. Jesus Machado, a linebacker, and I know he's working on a visit with Alabama, or he either is going to take one this week, and I don't know the details on it, but Georgia, Florida State, Oregon, Michigan State, Baylor, Tennessee, they've all offered him. And Mike Eckler was at his school during the bye week, and I know he's been recruiting him. So he's going to be a tough get. It's going to be very difficult, okay? But I think Kansas is in the mix. Another guy that told me he is going to schedule a visit, and this one's an interesting one. This is a new name on the radar as of yesterday, a defensive end named Junior Aho. He's from New Mexico Military Junior College. He's a 6'3", 255-pound defensive end. He's got early offers from Kansas, Minnesota, Western Kentucky, Texas, and Fresno State have come in the picture on him. 6'3", 255. He's from France. He's just learning. I think he's just learning the game. I went back and saw some film when he was in France. I've seen his film at New Mexico Military. I'll tell you, he's athletic. He's strong. He's a big kid. He can run. He's a unique 4x3. So he's almost like a high school recruit. You know, he's much more developed than a high school recruit. So he's another one. And then this morning, Cedric Melton, an offensive lineman from Klein Kane down in Houston, near the Houston area, told me that he plans on visiting Kansas as well. He just picked up the offer yesterday. Obviously, they've been in touch with him, or this just didn't come out of anywhere. And he is currently committed to Arizona, but he told me he will take a visit to Lawrence. So those are some recent developments. So we saw the Keenan Hambrick decommitment yesterday. I think that streak goes two ways. I think, you know, my guess is the Jayhawks are doing some adjusting to their philosophies and their recruiting board as well. So, you know, I don't know if we could see a few more things come down in the future of more quote-unquote adjustments to that recruiting board. So, and then, hey, locally, an interesting preferred walk-on offer, Max Colney out of St. James. You and I saw him at camp. Big, good-looking kid. I thought he was a guy who was a borderline scholarship offer player. So, you know, he picked up one from Stanford last week, a preferred walk-on. So he's a kid that'll probably start getting some more interest. And boy, I'll tell you what, you get kids like that who you can get as a preferred walk-on if you can get him. That's a pretty good sign because he's a good football player.
Well, and that St. James program has really started to make some waves here over the last several weeks specifically. I mean, obviously, they had the upset over Miege, beating them for the first time in their history. They kept it close against St. Thomas Aquinas. That is that's an interesting program right now. And like you said, if you can get a kid like that, a local kid, that makes it a little bit easier for him to walk on as an in-state tuition kid, that caliber, that frame. I mean, you never know. It's hard to tell what a walk-on's going to turn into. But when you're starting from that standpoint of that frame and that kind of size and everything, that's impressive. I mean, that's the kind of kid there that you can build around. And you mentioned all these other names and these highly sought-after kids that are going to visit. Have you heard anything specifically about potentially what game they may be coming to Lawrence for?
No, I haven't. I do think that you're going to see a visitor or two for the Kansas State game. And I want to touch on one other thing before we move on. I really believe Brent Dierman is going to add another quarterback. Okay. I don't know who it's going to be, but
yeah,
the things I'm hearing, the things I'm tracking right now, I will be absolutely shocked if Brent Dierman doesn't have another quarterback. There's a couple guys I'm keeping down right now, just for reasons that I don't know if things getting out publicly, I don't know if it helps the program right now. It's some things I've found out that definitely don't come from the University of Kansas or their staff that I don't know if some of the information got out, it would be helpful to them right now. But let's just say they're working hard and they are definitely tracking some quarterbacks, and I'm starting to hear some things out there. So that'll be something we'll follow in the upcoming podcast and definitely on the message board and the site.
One thing kind of building on that and also kind of rewinding to something you said a minute ago that caught my ear. I'm curious about this. You talk about Brent Dierman and him working to potentially find a quarterback that might fit his system and what he's going to run with this offense a little more closely. You talked about some adjustments and changes to the recruiting board. Could we see some maybe changes in regards to the kind of receivers and other offensive players that maybe some of the guys that are committed that maybe don't fit what he wants to do?
No, I don't think so. I think that, you know, Emmett Jones, like when you talk about receivers, he knows what a good receiver is. I mean, go look at all the guys he's coached, okay?
Unquestionably.
I mean, Kansas recruits good running backs. I mean, if you look at one thing that Kansas has done in their time, even when the program's been down for 10 years, it seems like they always have some pretty good running backs to throw out there. So I don't worry about receivers, and I don't worry about running backs and those type of things. I've always wondered about linemen, but the big thing with linemen is, and over the years I've talked to several of the offensive line guys that have come through KU. I've talked to John Reagan and Ed Warner and Mark Mangino and some of the guys that I've talked to. Offensive linemen can be developed. Okay, now obviously you want to get somebody with the tools and somebody that has the beginning to build. Okay, you don't want to take some kid from the ground floor and say it's going to get this kid 2 years just up to ground zero. I mean, you want to have a kid that has a starting point to where you can develop. But offensive linemen can be molded. So I don't really worry about as much of that stuff and a big change or shift in the type of players that they're going to look after.
All right. We've talked about recruiting. Now we are going to bring on a special guest for this episode. I mentioned him earlier, Caleb Taylor, defensive end from Staley High School that moved from the St. Louis area to Kansas City at the end of last school year and is now living on the Missouri side of the metro. Standout for the Staley Falcons. John had a chance to talk with Caleb. Let's hear what he had to say about his senior season as well as looking ahead to being a Jayhawk.
Our next guest is Caleb Taylor, a defensive end from Staley High School who committed to the Jayhawks in the summer. Caleb, how are you doing?
What's up, John? I'm good.
You know, get us caught up on your season. How's everything going and how you been playing?
Oh, everything going well. Honestly, you know, it was a little bit of an adjustment coming to a new city. You know, coming to a new city, new scheme, new defense, everything. But I think I've adjusted pretty well. You know, I've dealt with a couple of injuries this season. But, you know, despite that, I played pretty well. I played a pretty big part in my team defense. So definitely think I've done a good job adjusting.
You know, throughout the season since you committed, just talk about staying in touch with the Kansas staff and what coaches do you talk to the most?
Really, the staff is pretty consistent. So after I committed, well, first off, they all write me the handwritten letters every week. So I get actual letters from everyone. But in terms of phone conversations and whatnot, it's always been Coach Elliott who's been most consistent. Even before I committed, even ever since he offered me, he's always been the coach that was most consistent in, you know, keeping in touch with me, asking me how I'm doing and whatnot. So still the same.
You know, describe your relationship with the Kansas staff and how has it grown since even that you committed with them?
Yeah, I feel like I've always had a good relationship with the staff. Tortelli was interesting to me the first time I met him. He was kind of quiet and didn't say too much. And he wasn't the only coach that was up at the school when he came to meet me, but he still stood out among the other ones. So I was kind of intrigued by him. And now that I know him a lot better, he definitely definitely like him, have a much better relationship with him than I thought I would this soon. So, yeah, him and Coach Drake, I love Coach Drake. Coach Drake is probably the whole reason I committed. Sitting in Coach Drake's office and having a conversation with him about pretty much anything but football is probably one of the main reasons I committed. And that's the moment that what I said, you know, I want to go ahead and pull the trigger and commit. And, you know, Coach Miles, everybody loves Coach Miles, so I don't need to talk too much about that. But it's not just that. Even the recruiting staff, you know, the on-campus recruiters, everybody on KU staff has a lot of love for me, and I appreciate that. And got a lot of love for them, too.
You know, in the offseason, you moved from St. Louis to Staley. You know, talk about that drive from Staley to Lawrence. It's probably a lot easier for you, isn't it?
Yeah. It was a couple hours coming from St. Louis on the way to the official. So, actually, on my way home from the official, instead of driving back to St. Louis, we drove straight here and got the keys to the new house. So we got our first taste of how short the drive actually is. So it really doesn't feel long at all. So I'm definitely a big factor. And my parents coming to watch me the next 4 years, me being close to home, you know, and still having a sense of being halfway within, you know, just a sense of familiarity with the area. So appreciate that.
You know, I know you've been up to some games. You've seen the team play. What's your thoughts of being around the team, getting up to Lawrence and seeing them play and just watching the program grow under Miles?
I feel more at home every time I'm there. I love coming back and visiting, especially on game days, because even though the games may not be going how you people want them to always, for commits like me, we can always find positives in whatever. Like, we can be like, okay, we did this good. Okay, we did this good. We just this away from, you know, from actually winning and made the game more competitive. So I definitely love the game, the atmosphere as well, seeing that many. I was there for Oklahoma. And turning around and seeing all the fans behind me definitely it shocked me. Like, that meant a lot to me because if the fans are loyal enough to show up here now after so many seasons, you know, not being very successful, in a couple of years when we're winning more and more each year, I can't imagine what it would be like then, so I'm excited to see that.
Now, Caleb, you're planning to be a mid-year graduate, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, I'm going to ask you the final question. You know, you're 2 months away from signing and 3 months away. I mean, it's probably hard for you to believe to even reporting on campus. I mean, what are you looking for to being a Jayhawk in your future?
Yeah, it doesn't sound real sometimes when you actually give me the numbers like that. But honestly, I'm just looking forward to the chance to further myself. You know, I see going to college early as me, I get to get a head start on bettering myself. That's all I see it as, and that's the main reason I want to do it. So I can't wait. Think about it every day, you know. And I'm just excited to get on campus, get everything started as a student and as an athlete, and excited for everything the future holds.
Well, Caleb, I really appreciate you joining us on this show, and good luck this week in your next game.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
That was Caleb Taylor, who has a very bright future ahead of him and will enroll at KU and be on campus in Lawrence in just a few months. And that will do it for this football-only edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. If you have friends that are KU fans that don't know about the Inside Slant, bring them into the fold. Share it with them. Tell them to download it. The more, the merrier. For our man on the football beat and the publisher of Jayhawk Slant, John Kirby, I'm Randy Withers. We will talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.